The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend and engineer, Bob Dio. Bob, engineering, producing on the other side of the glass together. We welcome you. It's the midweek edition of Buckmaster. It's April the 24th, 2019. You're on 1030 The Voice. This is the place in Tucson for trusted local news and talk. We've got our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, and of course, kvoi.com. All of our podcasts for the Buckmaster Show are available on your schedule at buckmastershow.com. The live line number, is there something that you would like to say to a Tucson city councilman? He'll be on the live line in a moment here, 790-2040. Paul Cunningham, representing the Second Ward, Democrat. Mr. Cunningham, how are you today?
Very well. How are we doing?
Can I tell you a little story?
Sure.
All right. I was driving into work today, intersection of Broadway and Alvernon. We're at a stoplight. I look to my left. Here's this young couple. The driver, definitely into a text. Next to him, his female companion, both texting away. The big concern is the young man driving while texting. And then you wonder, Paul Cunningham, why we've got an issue here with people hitting pedestrians and crosswalks. It's a serious problem.
That number has spiked. It goes up and down. It changes with weather. It changes with community awareness. We've had a couple that have really hit home. We've had two on the east side. We had an 86-year-old woman hit less than a week ago, I think. Dan Benavides got hit last month, but he passed away earlier this month. It was just a shock to me. I can't even tell you how profoundly this is affecting Tucson. And in each of those cases, we don't even know if the drivers were distracted. But it's kind of an epidemic throughout the country. Some people say maybe we could bring back the red light cameras. And right now there's kind of no silver bullet. We've got to better light our infrastructure. I want to put up some bridges. I also want to be, In Dan's case, and in the woman's case, they were both in a crosswalk crossing properly, and so that's the crux of the situation. I think we may have to go back to protected left turns. Some of these things that we did that was so progressive many years ago, including not having overpasses and stuff like that, or not doing walking bridges, some of those might have some unintended consequences. And then there's the other side of it, where I'm driving down the street and there's a guy walking across the street. I'm driving down 29th and there's a guy walking across the street just east of the walking bridge at Columbus.
Yeah.
Running across the street right after a red light. So, there's two extremes to it. It's a tale of two discussions where motorists are saying, well, sometimes the pedestrians aren't taking into account. Pedestrians are saying we have to make I don't think there's any side to take here. We just have to improve our traffic control, and we have to improve our how we drive. I mean, we've really got to make those changes so that we don't have these accidents. Again, these spikes ebb and flow. If it's sustained for a long time, we'll really have considerable alarm. But hopefully the community can respond. And again, a lot of this will be just public education about how pedestrians and motorists share the road, and if they work together and they're kind of in sync with each other and know how they share the road, we may be able to avoid some of these.
Well, let me, I'll have the police chief, Chris Magnus, is the Friday Focus interview with myself and Tim Steller here in studio for pretty much the whole hour on noon, at noon on Friday. I wonder if we need to put some cops at some of these intersections, Paul Cunningham, and to try to get some of this red light running under control, because it is epidemic. There are people now just waiting 5 seconds, 10 seconds before they even decide to go through the intersection on a green after a red. They're so frightened of these red light runners.
Right. And so what I tell you is that hold on a second, Bill.
Okay, you got some. Paul is over at school. His day job, he is a social studies teacher, and he's got some kids there.
All right.
Okay, you're back with us. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah. So what I was going to tell you was that I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
That's all right.
I was going to say there was that we definitely have to take a look at how we enforce traffic within the city. But we've restored that motor unit. We've restored some of those traffic. And I think we have deployment in different hot spots where we're seeing a spike in traffic incidents. I think if we continue to do that, we can be successful in mitigating and curbing the trend that we're witnessing right now.
Now, you are over at school, correct?
Yeah.
And so, folks, if you sound a little distracted, you've got some little ones running around. What grade are you?
So I teach eighth grade, but what happens is that in the middle of this interview, which happens every time we do it, the bell rings.
Oh, I see.
It's called a passing period.
Okay.
So during that passing period, that 3.5 minutes, it can be a little distracting. So that's kind of what happened there.
Okay.
No big deal. No harm, no foul.
Okay, and the passing period is over at this point?
Yeah, you hear the bell in the background. Yeah.
All right. So is there anything else you think that the chief can do that I should bring up with him or what?
Well, he can bring up. Well, we can definitely bring up enforcement. We can definitely bring out moving resources into motors, which is traffic and traffic control. We can definitely talk about whether or not, but it's not just enforcement, Bill. It's also a transportation issue in where you're, again, taking a look at road infrastructure, proper crosswalks, more crosswalks, protected crosswalks. I mean, the likelihood of having incidents where the crosswalk is properly labeled and the crosswalk is lit is reduced dramatically when those factors are in place. So we've got to really take a look at where we've got dangerous crosswalks and pull them. I mean, just because we have a crosswalk there, if it's a dangerous crosswalk, we either A, need to enhance the crosswalk, or B, remove it and use signage or public education to say, make sure you're using a crosswalk. The other piece is in the intersections, the biggest danger in the intersections where some of this stuff's going on is the left turn when people are walking away from it. So when a person is crossing the street parallel with a left turner and they are on the opposite side of the street, and then walking parallel with somebody making a left turn, as they cross the median, the left turn's been the unprotected left turn has been looking at oncoming traffic, and that's where we're getting people are getting hit. And so we've got to be really aware of that. And if we can, one, educate the public, or two, use protected left turns, or three, encourage people to walk the opposite way so they're not walking against the grain on those left turns, then we may be able to mitigate, again, reduce some of these incidents.
All right. Paul Cunningham is with us, Tucson City Councilman, Ward Number 2, Democrat on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Let's see if we can work Lauren in before we take our first break. Hey, Lauren, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. I want to take a different tact or perspective on this. At night, not daytime, but certainly at night, I can't be the only one. I'm older, but my vision is fine. I've had my eye exam recently. You can't see pedestrians half the time, and I'm probably one of many that have had close calls almost hitting somebody now. And granted, we're talking crosswalks, but on occasion, I think we might have to be excused slightly when they are not in crosswalks. But either way, you can't see them. And my correction or solution would be, if you're a pedestrian, you got to have reflective vest or lighting, you know, lights, flashlights, like a headlamp or whatever, just like bicyclists. And half the bicyclists don't obey that rule anyway.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Go ahead, Councilman.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we can make a law requiring people to wear reflective clothing at night, but we can definitely do some public outreach and some public education that says, you know, yeah, if you're not paying attention to traffic while you're walking because you're on your phone or reading or whatever. I remember they used to have this skit on Channel 6 on like Sesame Street when I was a kid, where they'd encourage you to pay attention, and they'd show this guy trying to read the paper as he walked down the street.
Oh, yeah.
So the same thing goes for walking on the street. And the same thing goes for using common sense. And the same thing goes for, again, having that reflective clothing so that people can see you. These are all things that are really important. But we can't just do one thing. There's no silver bullet that's going to reduce pedestrian traffic accidents in Tucson. The only thing we can do is, or the best thing we can do is educate the public as much as possible and let them know to be more aware. And I guarantee you we'll have. And the last time we had a spike, which I want to say was like 2 years ago, we had a spike in pedestrian deaths. And it went down. It went down significantly because public awareness just increased naturally due to the fact we have. So I'm not saying that that's going to happen automatically. And I'm definitely not saying that there's not more we can do as a council. But what I will say, it's an ebb and flow process.
All right.
And we've got to take as many preventive measures as we can. There's not just one that'll do the trick. We've got to do them all.
And Lauren, if you're still listening, you're not alone in these close calls with the night driving with the pedestrians. Many folks have had those, and it's very, very frightening. When we come back with Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham, what are we going to do with this continuous influx of migrant families? Where are we going to house these people? That will be the first thing I will talk to the councilman about after we take the break. But right now, so excited about Mona's now with their breakfast, serving breakfast at 6:30. Now in the morning, the grill is up and running. They've got a great cook over there. I was there over the weekend. I can't wait to go back. This weekend, I had the blueberry pancakes. I had the challah French toast, both great. But I'm going to try the chocolate chip pancakes. They looked really good. So I'll be coming up to Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Check it out. They're open right now for lunch or breakfast all day at monasdanishbakery.com and on buckmastershow.com. A link to all of our great partners. Back in a minute. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 ocean and beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2, tours daily, biosphere2.org. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To learn more, please visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. You're listening to Bill Buckmaster on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Buckmaster now in our 9th year here during the noon hour on the radio, coming up on 1222. A very important discussion. Paul Cunningham with us on the live line, Councilman Ward 2, Democrat. A very important discussion last night at City Hall at the council meeting about how are we going to plan for this continuous influx of migrant families? The folks have done wonders over there at the former Benedictine Monastery in Midtown, but they say now Catholic Community Services says they're basically out of space. The developer is going to want to get going with his plans by summer. Where are we going with this, Paul Cunningham?
Well, I think the first thing to understand is that the main part is most of the refugees that are coming in are requesting under political asylum. They're sponsored and they are here legally. They are not here illegally. And I think that's a really important misconception that's out there. So I want to make sure that's the first thing that I cover. The second thing I want to cover is that most of them are not here in Tucson for more than about a week. They come into Tucson and they kind of get stabilized, and then they're moved on to either a transportation is arranged for them to go to where their relatives or where they were planning on staying in the first place, which is how they are granted entry into the country in the first place. So that's how I understand that, the first part. So the second part is, well, how many are we getting? Well, some days we get 5, and then some days we get 0, and then some days we get 350, and it isn't like an average, and it's not a steady flow. It's an up and down process, and you kind of never know what you're going to get. And some days you need 400 bed spaces, and some days you need 100. So those are some of the challenges that I think we're encountering at this point. There are several different options that we're exploring. We know it's going to be a community effort. I don't think we're going to cut back on city amenities or anything like that. We don't want to compromise city amenities or the city budget to help, against this effort or anything like that. But at the same time, we want to make sure everything gets held in balance. And the second part is that the community response has been amazing. And this is what Tucson does. We help people. And these are people that are coming in. They're fleeing gang violence, fleeing femicide. They're fleeing all kinds of different things. And They are, some of them are youth that are traveling unaccompanied, which is even a bigger issue. But I think we have what we're doing is I think in place so far is no short of amazing, considering the majority of the work and heavy lifting has been done in an all volunteer effort. I think the second piece is that once it's streamlined and organized, and we're able to identify an alternative site than the Benedictine, I think we'll be a little bit better off. And then the question becomes, well, how many more are we going to get? And we're not in control of that. And that's part of the biggest challenge is the unknown part. And so those are kind of, off the top of my head, those are kind of the things that we're facing for now. It's like some people are showing up and they just want to help and they haven't been screened. Some people are showing up and they're there for nefarious reasons. They literally want to go and harass the immigrants. And so we've had kind of those issues that we've worked through, and Catholic Community Services is doing a great job screening volunteers. But, you know, if we have 80 people that want to donate stuff, but all 80 people only donate blankets, and we didn't need blankets, we needed children's clothing, or we wanted teddy bears, or we wanted food or something. So it's really about the coordination of efforts. I think there's enough people that are willing to volunteer. I think there's enough people who want to help. I think that's not very even surprising, considering the type of people we have in Tucson. We have compassionate people in Tucson. We have people who want to help in Tucson. We have people who love Tucson. So I'm not surprised that we have this outpouring of care from our Tucsonans. What is typical, especially in a volunteer effort, is that we're not as streamlined and organized with our resources as we could be. And that's because we're kind of early. It's still kind of early. And it's evolving every day. But I think I'm pretty confident that as this process evolves and as this influx kind of either ramps up or winds down, at some point it's going to hit an apex. We'll be ready for it, and we'll be able to meet the challenges.
So no city money is being used on this, or what?
No, there's a little bit. I mean, because we are using bed spaces at the El Pueblo Center. We haven't opened any rec center. We have some staff that are helping coordinate efforts. So I can't say 000 city money is being used, but I will say it's a very, very limited amount at this point. And it is more or less resources that would fall into that job description anyway. That's what I could say.
You said some people have shown up to harass these migrant families.
Yeah, they brought that up in the meeting yesterday. I thought that was interesting. We had people basically, I wasn't there. I witnessed this firsthand. But what was reported yesterday by Councilmember Kozacik was there were people who posted volunteers, showed up, and then began harassing the immigrants.
What?
And the refugees. Yeah.
They posed as volunteers, and then once they were accepted into the volunteer community to help them, then it began.
They yelled at them and told them to leave the country. So, again, I don't know how many times that happened. I don't know if that was an isolated incident. Like I said, I wasn't there. But that was what was reported to me yesterday. So that's all I can tell you. I mean, I'm not trying to downplay it. I'm not trying to say, oh, you know, this is easy and this is no problem. But I don't want to overplay it and make it into some spectacle than it is either. We've been taking refugees and immigrants from in this country for over 100 years. Sometimes children, you know, have you watched The Godfather lately? The kid comes as an unaccompanied minor. We can handle this. We're America. This is what it's all about. And let's go. Let's do it. Let's help these people. Let's do what Tucson does best. And that's kind of my attitude about this at this point. And, you know, I think to look at it any other way would be inhumane.
I'm about out of time. What's their average stay, the folks in town?
So from what I understand, it's less than a week. But I don't know the exact numbers. In fact, I don't even know if we have an average stay yet, because there's probably some estimates, but I think it changed from the first group that came into the last group. Like I said, it's ever evolving. So for now, best I can say is I'm pretty sure it's less than a week.
And that plan to lower the height of the building around the monastery, that looks pretty good, or what?
Well, that's been voted on and it's passed. And you got to hand it to both the neighbors and Russ Lonely, who kind of came together at the end, and they did what Tucson always does, which is make the best decision possible that is compromising that people agreed to. And I'm really, it demonstrates the kind of city and town we have, and that's what it's all about.
All right, Councilman Cunningham, we'll let get back to your social studies class. When does class end? In about a month or not, or what?
I got I think it's May 23rd, May 25th or something. I think we only have a handful of actual school days left. Mm-hmm. And when you're dealing with second semester eighth graders, basically second to the second half of the fourth quarter eighth graders, some of them start to, well, let's just say they, you know, a lot of them have gotten A's their entire. I've got some amazing kids that I teach. I can't tell you how fun this group of students has been. This is one of my favorite groups I've had. And the bottom line is that I'm sorry to see them go, but this last 3 weeks poses some challenges.
There you go. All right. Well, for your next visit with you, and we try to get you on every month to 6 weeks, you'll be here in our beautiful new studios for your next visit, Paul.
Hey, Bill, looking forward to it. And thanks for having me on the show. Thanks a lot, Tucson, for listening.
Thank you very much. Paul Cunningham with us on 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Coming up next, this whole thing about homework. Let's talk to Dr. Robert Hendricks, the Buckmaster contributor on education. What is the solution? I mean, we're going to talk about what some have called the cult of homework on Buckmaster on 1030, The Voice, after the mid-show break. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 ocean and beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. They've been so good to the Buckmaster Show over the years. Really one of our legacy sponsors, pretty much with us since day one when we launched the project back in 2011. And I love talking about it because everybody that goes over there has a great time, only a three-hour drive from Tucson. A good starting place if you're thinking about it. Maybe you haven't given it much thought, but hey, it's just be a great kind of getaway. southwestnewmexico.org. There you'll find, of course, great places to stay, all the listing of those, and all sorts of ideas for recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Let's welcome now one of the two dozen or so contributors we continue to add to our list of contributors, and Dr. Robert Hendricks, speaking of legacy contributors, he's been with us pretty much since day one. Dr. Hendricks, Associate Professor Emeritus, UA College of Education, former superintendent of the highly regarded Flowing Wells School District. How are you today, Dr. Hendricks?
I'm doing just great. My allergies can make it through the season and the Palo Verde trees and so forth. It'll be great.
Do you take any kind of a natural remedy for them or just sort of suffer
through it? I just try to stay hydrated.
I think that's
the best thing to do.
Interesting article called The Cult of Homework. This was an education piece that was in The Atlantic. I didn't realize, Bob, that we've kind of gone back and forth over the last 100 years of what is considered a fair amount of homework. Sometimes the trend has been, oh, it just stresses the kids out. Now we've kind of gone to the point where we're at the other end where we're really heavy into the homework, huh?
We are. And I think it tends to vacillate depending on the economic and political times of our country, but we... there is a great deal of pressure right now for a reexamination of homework and what role it should take in education, particularly as it relates to the length of the school day. And some people believe that homework extends that experience and gives students a little bit more of a leg up in terms of the international competitive marketplace. But there's some really interesting things that we know, and then there's some things that we don't know. But let me start with what we do know. We do know that American teenagers on average are actually doing twice as much homework and spending twice as much time on homework as they did in the 1990s. And that's a pretty significant figure. A lot of that, I think, is conditioned, again, by the times, but also a parental expectation that homework is important. And when you ask parents why it's important, they'll relate to their own experiences in school and will say, well, that was an expectation for me. Therefore, it should be kind of a legacy expectation for my children as well.
Don't tell me the little kids are doing it. Now, when I think back to kindergarten, I think back we took naps and we had a pretty good time. And I don't remember being given loads of homework as a kindergartner. The little kids are given.
The step up is starting with kindergarten.
What in the world?
It's, kindergarten has taken on an academic role, which heretofore was, a social experience.
Sure, that's what I remember.
And now there's a great expectation that this is where students should start their academic experience. But there's a recent study that was done by Tennessee State University, which I think points to the conflicting role of homework. 67% of the parents that were polled supported some kind of a school homework policy at the secondary level. Smaller number, about 51% at the elementary level. So clearly more support at the secondary level than elementary level. But here's some interesting pieces of that when you break it down. 60% associated the word rigor and quality of the schools based on the homework that they required.
Really?
Yeah, and so, it's understood that, you know, when you see certain schools that are promoting and in a competitive nature, you know, who they are, they talk about a rigorous homework policy as something that, you know, is attractive to parents. But here's the contradictory statement. In the same study, a larger percentage of the parents, 76%, acknowledged that the burden of getting their children to do their homework and the frustration with the resulting conflict that comes with it. And so, you know, parents are saying, yeah, we want more homework, but they're saying, you know, we really don't want it dumped in our lap, and we don't want the burden of expecting our students to do it because it's going to cause conflict. And so, and then when you talk to the teachers, same poll, teachers generally supported the idea of homework assignments, but more than 50% expressed some concern and reluctance to give assignments because students simply failed to do the work. So, one idea, you know.
Do you have any idea what the average, how much time is what would be considered average homework? An hour?
The problem is it's a lot of this information is self-reported.
I see.
And so a teacher may tell you, we expect, you know, 2 hours of homework a night. If you're at the secondary level, you've got multiple classes. And I have serious doubt whether teachers ever coordinate, you know, what they give their students to do. So it could be 2 hours, could be 1 hour. If the student's not going to do it, it isn't going to make any difference. And in the inner city schools, very few students do it. They talk about competing issues, not having a place to study, work, all kinds of things. So there are lots of reasons why homework isn't being done. And essentially, here's my take on it. I really sort of categorize three types of homework. One type is practice. And this is basically reinforcing what you've done in the classroom. So let's say I'm a math teacher and I've introduced a new algebraic formula. And we work on some problems with that formula during that classroom.
Right.
It would be very reasonable to give students maybe two or three more problems to take home to do that night.
Right.
Now, again, it becomes expectation. So this is what I would do the next day as a teacher. I would say, put those problems that you did out on your desk. I'm going to come around and look at them while we're looking at these problems together. And what kind of problems did you have solving? What were your solution issues? Right. And then it becomes an expectation. I think that's a realistic way to use homework. And, and quite frankly, in the real world, that's a life skill, practice.
Yes,
we practice a lot of things to get ready for something that we're going to do.
What are the other two?
The
items?
Other two, the second one is preparation. And that is, you know, if you're going to have to understand something, maybe you have to read some background material before the discussion the next day. Or maybe you're discussing a pro and con of a situation. You need to do the research. You need to do the background.
And that is also a skill that is a lifelong skill.
Or you're going to read a
play.
And you can't. You can't take just classroom time to do that. There's not enough time to do that. So that's a reasonable thing. And again, that's a life skill. People need to come prepared, whether it's for the job or whatever. Then the third kind is the kind I really don't like, and that's the busy work. That's simply giving something the student to do overnight. It doesn't really relate to any instructional objectives. It's just busy work. It just fills the time. So the first two, I think, very reasonable and really can help the student in, you know, later on in life. And that's homework, but I also define it, rather than the homework, preparation and practice.
There you go. Dr. Robert Hendricks, thank you very much. We'll look forward to your visit coming up in early May. I think it's the day before I take off for vacation, so I should be in a pretty darn good mood that day.
I think you will be, yes, absolutely.
All right, great to see you, Bob. Thank
good
you very much.
Good seeing you, too. Okay.
Coming up next, freshman lawmaker Andres Cano. He's done a terrific job in his first 100 days at the Arizona Legislature. He'll tell us about some of the goals that have been fulfilled for the legislature so far, what still needs to be done. It's Buckmaster on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an Ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. This portion presented by Green Things. Green Things now isn't just about the greatest plants in town. It's now about some of the best merchandise you're ever going to find. Merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. It's Zocalo. Come tour the five shops at Zocalo Village on the 13-acre site at Green Things. This has become a destination, I'm telling you. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. You're going to have a great time over there. Their website is greenthingsaz.com. Let's go now to the Arizona State Capitol in Phoenix. Andres Cano, Democrat, District 3. Andres, the second youngest state representative, second youngest lawmaker in the 2019 legislative session. Andres, how are you?
Thank you, Bill. I'm so honored to be with you, and I'm doing fantastic, ready to head out onto the House floor for some votes.
How have you been treated as a young member of this legislature?
Well, you know, more than anything, I think about the 225,000 constituents that I represent. Legislative District 3 includes the University of Arizona, downtown Tucson, the West Side, the South Side, and the Pascua-Yaqui Nation. And so what I try to do in representing my constituents is putting the me aside and talk about us, about we. And I will say that it's been difficult to be a Democrat, a member of the minority party, Bill, but I am inspired and empowered because for the first time since the 1960s, Arizonans have elected a near equally split House of Representatives here at the state capitol, 31 Republicans, 29 Democrats. We've not seen that number in our history be that close, and we are, what I like to say, 2 years away from controlling this chamber. And if I'm reading the tea leaves right and reading the tea leaves of the colleagues on the other side of the aisle, I think we're preparing for a complete new chapter for the state of Arizona in 2021.
How do you look at this session? We're 100 days in, plus a few. It looks like the marquee issue, as far as I'm concerned, is the texting while driving bill.
Absolutely. The texting while driving bill was absolutely an accomplishment and a step forward. It is legislation that has been proposed by Democrats, actually, for the last 6 years, and we were finally able to get that legislation signed into law by the governor earlier this week. I think what it means is that we have to stay vigilant on our roads and make some very simple commitments to taking care not only of ourselves, but of the people around us who are on the roads. And, you know, between now and early next year, police officers are going to be able to stop you if they see you with a handheld device in your hand. Use your hands-free device, pull off the road, do whatever you can to stay focused, to stay vigilant, and to stay safe.
And I told this story, Andres, at the beginning of the show today before my interview with Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham while driving to the station today at the intersection of Alvernon and Broadway. Next to me, a young couple, probably in their 20s. The young man was driving, and they were at the stoplight, and the young lady with him both had their handheld texting, were obviously very much into texting, including the driver. That's very disappointing to see, Andres.
Very disappointing. I think the best thing that we can do is just to put the cell phones away. The legislation that we enacted this week will allow you to use your phone and have it in your hand at red lights. But I think it's better to err on the side of caution and just put the phone away.
We have now several big issues still to deal with. And of course, the budget is the big one. What's the timetable on that?
Well, I think your guess is as good as mine, and it's an $11 billion conversation. And we in the minority party have been asking for a seat at the table since day one. And unfortunately, the House Republicans seem very, very focused on furthering partisan gridlock here at the state capitol. I'll take a step back, Bill, and let you know that, you know, I came in with a very, very optimistic perspective as a freshman lawmaker of us being able to put our differences aside, to be able to focus on providing good jobs and wages to working families in Arizona, infrastructure, fixing our roads. But the Republicans in that 31-29 split, remember it's the closest, have really, really led this chamber with an iron fist, so much so that a good bill like mine, which would restore funding to Pima Community College, didn't even get a hearing. And
wow.
Of the 300 votes that we've sent over to the governor, guess how much of those bills have come from Democrats? 7 of those bills. We control.
Wow.
We control 48% of this chamber, and unfortunately, led by the GOP Republicans, we are just in gridlock, Bill. And I think, you know, folks who need better jobs, who need quality health care, funding our schools and our universities, higher education, those shouldn't be partisan issues. And so I'm hopeful that in the budget negotiations, we, in the final weeks that we have here, see some ability to leverage, but I'm not seeing it from my colleagues, and I just find that really disheartening.
Go over that again, because there is just no rhyme or reason why Pima Community College should not have their full funding restored in this day and age where we're trying to get a workforce. We've got Caterpillar here. Pima's been doing such great things lately in getting our and trying to up the workforce level, and then you introduce a bill and it gets nowhere. I don't get it.
Well, you know, and I don't get it either. I think ultimately what we need to do is to really understand that if we do want to increase the workforce, if we want to increase access to education and to good certification, we have to put our money where our mouth is and invest in people. Most folks in Southern Arizona, if they're wanting to get another chance at getting higher education, are starting with the community college system. And so I will give the governor credit that he has a significant proposal to Pima Community College in his proposed budget that is for a specific program, aviation program, which is an emerging industry. But I have a lot more constituents who aren't going to be focused on the aviation sector. And so my bill is a simple restoration to Maricopa and Pima Community Colleges, who, by the way, are the two largest community college districts throughout the state of Arizona, receiving $0 in state support since 2014. That's wrong. We should change that chapter and write a new one for our state.
Andres Cano with us. Andres is representing, as a Democrat, a legislative district 3. He's 26 years old. He's the second youngest state lawmaker. So what needs to be done beside the budget?
Well, I think we got to keep paying attention to how we're going to hold our leaders here at the state capitol accountable, not only in this session, but beyond. I mean, this morning we heard a very scary proposal by the Republican chairwoman of the state party, Callie Ward, supporting a sales tax hike that supposedly is meant to go to education, and it will. But the problem is that when I talk to constituents, they're concerned about taxation, and a sales tax is the most regressive form of sales tax, and it may fund a $300 million allocation to our state by increasing Proposition 301 to a full cent, as opposed to the current sixth of a cent. But ultimately, I think we got to stay focused on the larger conversation. We have a $1 billion shortfall in our K-12 schools right now. Our universities continue to focus on rising tuition, and that's because this legislature refuses to offer resources to them. So, you know, as a first generation college grad, the product of good public schools, I want us to get really serious about how we're going to do it. And I'm just surprised that we have the GOP lawmakers and especially its state party supporting a sales tax hike for Arizonans. We can have a different conversation that's a little bit more progressive instead of regressive.
Do you meet with some of the younger members, Andres?
Absolutely. And I think ultimately this is the most connected legislature that we've ever had with Arizonans. We are doing everything we can to inform our constituents, to let them know that what we do at the state capitol is so influential and so meaningful to Arizonans' day-to-day life, from healthcare access to providing education resources to our our most vulnerable communities. We do it all over here, and I think that folks are paying attention. And when I say that it's a new chapter for Arizona, it is. And I think that's why you're seeing so much gridlock, is that what's left of the power up here from the majority party is, if they continue to not stay focused on everyday common sense solutions for Arizonans, we're going to write a bright new chapter for our state.
All right. You've only got a few seconds left. Are you hearing this might be a session that kind of harkens back to the old days, pushing it up to into June?
That's what we're hearing, yes, and I am hopeful that what we can do is have a productive conversation that involves both parties, but June is what we're hearing.
All right. Andres Cano, freshman lawmaker. Andres, it's always a pleasure. It's good to connect with you, and I'm glad the session is going well for you in your first year up there. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much, Bill. Appreciate everything you do.
Thank you very much. Andres Cano, representing Legislative District 3 at the Arizona State Legislature. The 2019 session passed already 100 days. And you heard it, Andres saying we could go into June. Boy, I remember some of the old days where we would go, they'd stop the clock, actually. On June 30th, they would stop the clock, meaning the fiscal year didn't end, even though it actually did. It gets really kind of hairy when you get to that area in late June. That's it for the Buckmaster Show. Bob Dio, engineer producer, says goodbye, everybody. But Bob doesn't get to leave. He's got Steve Rivera coming up with Eye on the Ball on 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Dr. Mark Stegeman will be our lead interview tomorrow. That ought to be fun, talking about TUSD. Hope you have a great afternoon and evening.